Blog Talk Radio.
Hello. Hi, this is Rachel Kramer Bessel, and I guess I'm hosting today. I apologize if we don't have a lot of callers because I wasn't sure who was going to be calling in, but I hope you will join us. And I'm here to talk about anything. I'm actually in Seattle right now, and I will be back in Seattle the weekend of June 25th, 26th, 27th, and, well, the 27th is Monday, and I will be doing a reading at Babeland in Capitol Hill along with Shauna Germain and members of the Burlesque Troupe Naked Girls Reading. Okay, now I'm hearing myself on an echo. I'm still getting used to this service. So please, if you are in Seattle or if you know people in Seattle, please tell them to come out on June 27th to Babeland, where you're going to have free cupcakes. And also, if you know people in London, I'm going to be in London doing readings July 2nd and July 4th. July 4th is still in the works, but July 2nd is going to be at Shush, and there's going to be free champagne and free cupcakes, and it's my first time reading in London, and so that's going to be very exciting, and I'm with a really great lineup of readers who I'm looking forward to meeting for the first time. The only one of them that I have met is Elizabeth Caldwell, so I really can't wait for that. So I don't know if people have questions, but I will tell you who is going to be reading with us at Shush, and I hope I don't mispronounce any British words, but it's at 57 Hoxton Square. I have been to Shush before, and it's a very lovely shop. I'm going to be reading July 2nd with Janine Ashbless, Jacqueline Appleby, Justine Elliott, Katie Grace, KJB, and Carmel Lockyer, and possibly I'm working on some other local authors in the UK. Most of them have their own books out. I've just ordered a few of them, so I'm looking forward to reading them before I go. And what else? Well, I am multitasking. I'm trying to focus on this. It's a little strange because I'm waiting for people to call in. But in other news, I will tell you that tomorrow, April 19th, I'm, my head, I'm a little bit off on days, but tomorrow, April 19th, the new issue of Penthouse goes on sale, and I have an interview with comedian Hannibal Buress in it, and there's some great photos of him. So you can check that out on newsstands tomorrow. What else? So those two readings are coming up, and I'm also working on a special event in Seattle to be held that same weekend. And I am editing some anthologies. Please ask me anything. I think someone's about to come join us. A caller.
Hi, my name is Jenny. I'm from Seattle, and I was just wondering what else you're doing in the Seattle area while you're around.
Well, today I'm only today is my last day this weekend, but I am coming back June 25th, 26th, and 27th, and I'm coming back to do the. This is not about erotica, but I'm coming back to do the rock and roll marathon, which I'm walking the half marathon. And I am looking into doing a special dinner on June 26th if I can find a venue. So actually, if anyone in Seattle knows a good venue with a like private area, we're looking into doing a special dinner where basically just have a nice dinner and you get a free book. And then on June 27th, I am doing a reading at Babeland that I believe is 6 to 8. And it's with Naked Girls Reading, who are a local burlesque troupe. Now, they are not going to be naked. I don't want to oversell this. And then people get there, and they're like, oh, they're not naked, because they can't be naked in day glam. But
yeah,
they are going to be scantily clad. And that's the first time I'm actually seeing Naked Girls Reading perform, because they there's different groups around the country and in Canada who do full-on naked performances. You can go to nakedgirlsreading.com and find out more. And they do it to everything from Dr. Seuss to classic books to science fiction. And I thought, oh, well, this is a great chance for them to do it to something like, you know, erotica. So
yeah.
Cool. Awesome.
So
thank you.
So yeah, no, I'm having a great time. It's been beautiful weather this weekend, and
yeah,
I wish I could stay longer. I wound up walking from Capitol Hill all the way to Queen Anne.
Oh, wow.
And, so, yeah, so, no, Seattle's been really wonderful, and it seems like there's a lot of great stuff going on. So
cool.
Thanks. So, yeah, I will be back then, and I actually was at Elliott Bay Books just shopping, and they were very nice to me, so I'm hoping to maybe come back there early next year.
Yeah, cool. That's my favorite.
Cool.
I love that bookstore.
That bookstore was huge, and I even told them, I'm not sure if New York has a bigger, I mean, probably somewhere, but, like, physically, it was just so huge, and it was nice because I love New York, but one thing I don't like is where, like, everywhere you go, you're kind of crammed on top of people, and there it was so spacious and beautiful, and I had been to the one, the old location, and this one was just so, it was really nice, so
I was impressed.
And they have a great sex section, so.
Yeah, they do. Yeah, they've done a good job with it. Okay,
and
well,
they have lots of cool cards.
Yeah.
Well, thanks.
Right, cool.
So, yeah, I hope you can make it in June.
Yeah, I definitely.
And I'll hopefully, like, get the word out and about in town about the June event. And I'm working on some special cupcakes for it. So,
thanks. Awesome. Thank you. Thank you.
So, okay, back to me. Thank you for calling. I am having a lovely time in Seattle. I have been, this is not a product plug. I don't really do, well, not really do. I don't do product plugs, but I am staying at the Vintage Park downtown, which I found via Priceline. And if you are looking for a hotel in Seattle, I would recommend them. And they are right near this waffle place called Sweet Iron Waffles that I think I might have to write an erotica story about, because the waffles were just really good. And they used a blowtorch. I think they were using a blowtorch on some waffles, and I was just fascinated by that. Something about a blowtorch that, like, scares me, but it intrigues me, and therefore I think it's kind of sexy. So yes, and kind of my, I've never written about waffles. I've probably food-wise, I've written about hamburgers, cupcakes. I've written about a restaurant. I don't know if I've ever read a waffle erotica story, but, you know, there's always room for one. I think we have another caller calling in. Hello?
Yes, hi.
Hi.
Hi, I just had a question about sort of the writing experience of writing these books as a writer myself. I was wondering, what is it like, what do you think are the ingredients for that make a successful erotica story, and how much is holding back and letting go, sort of, what's the right balance for that?
It's really hard to say, like, in the abstract, and I know this is, I am going to give you an answer, but it definitely is one of those, for me, I know it when I see it, because some people, I mean, it's like I can't say, you know, this many pages of sex and this many pages of buildup, because it really, it depends. I mean, I think wherever you're starting out the story in terms of the sexual part of it, because, I mean, you can start in the middle if you're able to pull that off, but I think you want to make sure that you're telling us, like, who the people are and how they got there in some way, and in a way that works for the story, that doesn't feel like you're just giving all kinds of backstory, but because I feel like sometimes people jump too early into the action, and it doesn't give the reader a chance to really know enough about the character and why they're intrigued by the person that they're intrigued by or why they want to have sex with them. And I think the more you can work that in, like the more you can work in why what's happening is happening and why it's sexy without, you know, in a way that shows and doesn't tell as much as possible. I think that makes, when you get to the more physical parts, I think that makes it, it's a bigger payoff for the reader, if that makes sense. So, and then other elements, I mean, I think you really want to try to grab the reader right away because sometimes, you know, if there's too much other stuff going on and you're like waiting and waiting for, it's not so much that you have to get to the sex right away, but you want to grab them and like have something either dramatic happen or have there be some sort of suspense or tension or something that like gets them to keep reading. And I've been reading a lot of bondage erotica for my book, Best Bondage Erotica 2012, which is coming out in December, and so I've been, it's interesting when I'm editing something that's all about one topic, because I really get a chance to see kind of what works and what doesn't, but it's hard to distill that into one single piece of advice. So I'd say something that is snappy in the sense that it keeps you drawn into the story, and, you know, wanting to know what happens next. And I mean, sometimes, you know, sometimes that's going to be, take 5,000 words to say what you want to say. And sometimes it only is going to take 2,000 words. It's not so much that 5,000 is too long, but like if it is going to be 5,000, it really has to keep pace and make the reader want to keep going.
I understand that. I remember reading a very famous actress's autobiography where she talked about playing Maggie the Cat from Cat on a Hot Tin Roof on Broadway, and she said, if I didn't give every man in the audience, she put it cruder, but a turn on, then I wasn't doing my job, because the only way the part would work is if all the men could see how desirable she was and how insulted she was that she was kicked to the curb. And it's, I was just wondering what, do you sort of try to play to that one audience member in your readership when you're thinking of this situations, to sort of put yourself in their place and that type of thing?
I'm sure some people do. I think if I were trying to do that, I would feel maybe not constrained, but I'm focused on just telling the story as it appears in my head and getting the image that I am trying to get across in my head onto the, you know, onto the page and have it convey it the way it's happening sort of visually for me. And then sometimes I'll reread it and listen to it. For me, it's hard to sort of picture anyone else hearing or listening to it, because once I start doing that, I start, if not censoring it, then sort of tweaking it. And then I feel like once you start doing that for one type of person or one specific person, it's really hard to not keep doing that. So I guess and this is going to sound narcissistic in a way, but I guess I'm the person that I'm at the very beginning trying to please when I'm writing it. And I can usually tell if something feels off or just forced or doesn't work the way it did in my initial conception of it. And then sometimes I'll have other people read it and say, and just ask for their general feedback. Because sometimes I work from a specific image, like either I have an idea for a type of, you know, a scenario that I want to do, or a type of fetish that I want to write about. And sometimes it goes exactly the way I've planned it, and sometimes it just doesn't, the words don't convey what I'm trying to, you know, say, if that makes sense. So that's personally my biggest challenge, but I mean, I'm sure there's some people who do more of what you're saying. Does that make sense?
Thanks. Totally. Thanks.
Sure, thank you. Anyone else have any questions? I'm trying to think about what I'm working on right now. I'm writing, actually, a story that's sort of inspired by it's inspired certainly by something I've never done myself, which is go to a champagne room at a strip club. But it takes, I don't want to give too much away because I'm in the middle of reading it, but it takes that premise of the champagne room and kind of personalizes it. It's but it's interesting because it is something that's a little bit mysterious to me because I've been to strip clubs, but I've only, been told stories about the champagne room. And also I just think it sounds cool, like champagne room, because I've had champagne. I like champagne. So that is one story I'm working on. I've actually been a little bit stuck. Like, I've been trying to think of certain stories that I want to write, and they haven't all been panning out the way I want to. But I am working on my first tattoo erotica story that's, I was going to say, I don't know if I could have written it before I'd gotten a tattoo. I probably could have because it's not actually about the process of getting tattooed. It's about a relationship where someone gets a tattoo, but it's still something that I have a feeling I might not have been able to write before I got a tattoo. But not to say that people can't write about tattoos. It's actually really interesting, not in the erotica world, but there's a series of tattoo mysteries that I read by this woman, Karen E. Olson, whose blog is KarenEOlson.blogspot.com, OLSON, I believe. And they're set in Las Vegas. They're about a woman who runs a tattoo parlor and has a lot of tattoos, and tattoos feature prominently in all the books. And she's been to Vegas 3 times and she doesn't have any tattoos. So she, had to research that stuff. And I think that's fascinating. And, I think it's something also that, if that's something you want to write about, that could feature in numerous stories, because there's not one kind of tattoo and there's not one reason people get tattoos and stuff. So I'm hoping that story works out, but it's been taking longer than I'd wanted it to. But I had this initial idea about the tattoo, and so yeah. What else am I working on? I will go to my computer and look, because sometimes I forget what I'm working on, or I have old stories that just really, that they stay there for months on end. And sometimes I have titles. I don't want to give away my title, but I have a few titles that I love so much that I'm going to plan a whole story around them, even though I'm not really sure how they're going to come out or who the main characters are, but the titles just pop out at me. And that is definitely something, I would never publish a story just because I like the title, but when a title catches my eye, it kind of draws me to it. And I think that's a way to somewhat orient yourself to a specific story. I find that if I write the title at the top of the page, often that helps me just conceive of what I'm doing. And forget who I was talking to about pseudonyms. But sometimes if I plan to use a pseudonym, or I think I might use a pseudonym, and I write that pseudonym at the top of the screen, it helps me to just write the story. Sometimes when I can't do it as myself, when it's not flowing the way I would have wanted it to, that helps me. And sometimes stepping away from the computer helps me, and just walking around and thinking and, observing, whether it's the hot guy at the waffle place or whatever. I haven't started to write a story about waffles, but definitely that image of, just the specific sensory details of the guy who I thought was attractive at the waffle place, and the waffles and the blowtorch. And sometimes the reality of that winds up being really different. I was telling a friend that I wrote a story that is set in an art gallery, and I know very little about the art gallery world. And I said, I think I was inspired by the documentary My Kid Could Paint That, which is about a 4-year-old who's a painter. It was not directly inspired. I didn't watch the movie and say, oh, those people you know, I'm going to write a story about them. The story is not about them, but I think because there were so many shots in the art gallery, when I had this idea for a story, it's about a woman who's an artist and her husband winds up having to be her model because her other model had dropped out. I think when I wound up writing about the gallery, I had that visual image in my head. So I think really anything can be good fodder for erotica, but that, you know, getting from that initial idea to the final product is not always as easy as it looks, if it looks easy. There's that. What else? Seattle. I don't think, well, I will tell you about my other events that I have coming up that are not events I'm hosting, although I am hoping to hear back about a venue that I'm very interested in doing a really cool event in New York, which would, it would probably cost about $5, and I want to have trivia, music, film, spoken word, all kind of sex-themed, although not necessarily all erotica per se, if I can get access to that space. But I am doing a reading this Wednesday with Galley Cat editor Jason Boog, where we're all reading one page of anything we want, which I think should be interesting. And I said to someone who I saw at a different reading the other night, you know, one page, that should be easy. I think we have a caller from the UK, which is very exciting. Hello.
Hi, Rachel. This is Katie Grace. How are you doing?
Hi, I'm good. I'm so happy to hear from you. I'm so excited that I'm going to get to meet you. And
I am really looking forward to your book. Oh, thank you very much. I'll be happy to sign it.
You're welcome. Thank you. No, I was very excited. I realized most of you guys who are reading have your own books out. So I'm very excited. And Shush has been so wonderful. I can't wait. I think I might even have some champagne.
Definitely.
Do you want to tell us about
you
your book? Do you want to tell us about your novel? I haven't started it yet, so don't like give too much away, but you can set it up for us.
I won't give much away. What I will tell you is it's basically a modern retelling of Psyche and Eros, set in London, complete with leather and Harleys. So,
wow, do we have to know anything about Psyche and Eros? Because I don't know anything about them. Sadly.
It's a Greek myth, basically, and what it is
okay.
Well, actually, it was inspired by the fact that I was stuck on the Eurostar train in the channel, under the channel, in the dark. And so these ideas that you were talking about how you get your ideas, I started thinking, what would happen if you had an encounter in a train in the dark and you couldn't see your lover's face?
Wow.
And then how would you carry that beyond that, supposing that you could not see your lover's face during the time your relationship grew, which is basically in the story of Psyche and Eros. That's more or less what happens. And all the kinds of trouble you can get in by wondering if the person that you think you love is really who you think he is, or is there a monster behind the mask? So that's kind of basically it in a nutshell.
Oh, I'm excited. It's funny because I read a lot of erotica, obviously, for my books and just in general, but so much of what I read is short fiction that I do read novels, but I haven't read an erotic novel in a while. So I'm looking forward to that. I got your book and I got The Business of Pleasure by Justine Elliott. Is that how you say her name?
Oh, Justine's fabulous.
Is it Elliott?
Yes, that's
anyway,
a great one.
So yes. I'm excited to read those. And I think what I like, you know, excites, they're doing a lot of really cool stuff. So actually I should get in touch with them because there are also people who I've worked with but I haven't met yet. So I keep remembering other people, other authors in the UK because there's a lot of you. I'm like, oh, I forgot to invite that person. So I'm really, really excited about getting to come over and just check everything out. And maybe I'll write some stories set in London.
Oh, that would be great. Yeah, there are a lot of us here, and we're all extremely excited to get to meet you and to read with you. And
it's fabulous.
So I can't tell
now,
you how excited we are. I think it's going to read like an erotic writer's who's who that night from what it sounds like, because even the people who are reading, there are going to be a lot of people there. It's going to be really fun.
Oh, thank you. Now, I don't remember which shop I went to, but I do remember that when I was last in London, which is, I think, 07, I didn't have a cell phone that worked there, and I was wandering all over looking for that store, and I was just walking and walking and walking, and finally I found it. But even though I had a map, it was a little bit challenging. Katie, stay on the line if you can, but I think we have another person calling in, so let me say hello to them. Hello?
Yeah, hi. Rachel, I was curious to know, where do you get your inspiration for your writing? Is it from personal experience or just secondhand experience?
It's really everything. Like, definitely when I started, most of my stories were either kind of true or mostly true or totally true or much more inspired by my personal life. And now sometimes it'll be inspired by my personal life, but I think the difference is it's not like I'm retelling exactly what happened to me, whereas the first few stories I wrote, it was usually from the point of view of either me or someone like me. Like, the very first story I wrote was called Monica and Me, and it was about Monica Lewinsky, but the main character was basically me, someone named Rachel, you know, going to a book signing by Monica Lewinsky, except it wasn't actually true. But so now I think when I write about my personal life, it's something that happened to me, but I put the character who's experiencing the same thing into that character's not like me in some way, like either maybe they're male or maybe they're, you know, they live somewhere else or they're, you know, it's a different situation. Because I think it got a little less interesting for me, and just I didn't have as many things to say. And also I think I have this habit when I'm writing in the first person, and it's something that actually happened to me, because I know what happened, I kind of gloss over a lot of details. So I found that when I try to write from a different kind of person's point of view, I'm forced to really think about, okay, who is this person? What is their motivation? And then I'm also inspired by things people tell me. Like, it could be something very minor, like I had sex in an elevator, or this thing happened to me, or this random, you know, even if it's someone telling me a story about something that happened to someone else, and it just sort of might spark an image. And as I said earlier, you know, sometimes I have a great image or a great setting or a great title, and then I go to start writing, and it doesn't happen the way it sounded so fabulous in my head. So there's a lot of trial and error. And sometimes I'll write like 90% of a story, and then I leave it for several months, and then I go back and finish it. But I really think, especially with erotica, you can be inspired by almost anything, whether that's an object, like an inanimate object, or a person, or a setting, or anything really.
Awesome.
Katie, what about you? Thank you.
Yeah, I think that's true. I think it can be the strangest things that inspires you too. It can be, I've been inspired when I've been out weeding in my garden, and that would seem like the most unerotic place to possibly be. And yet,
visceral, like you're touching the dirt. I don't know. I don't garden myself, but I could see how that could be inspiring.
Yeah, I actually think that's probably it. But it, like you said, it can be just anything. And I walk a lot, I find that I get a lot of inspiration when I go on long walks. But then I've been doing the dishes over the kitchen sink, and something will come to my head, you know. Or I'll see people on the street doing something that may not necessarily be erotic, but it'll just spark something.
I think that makes sense, too, in the sense that, you know, it's not going to happen like this, but say when we walk down the street, we saw people having sex. Like, I think, that might be interesting, and certainly if that actually happened, you probably would do a double take. But I think that, you know, sometimes it's the non-sexual things that can spark an idea for an erotic story, because it might spark something unexpected or unusual. And I think the thing about sex and why I think erotica, you really can take inspiration from anything, is that almost anything can be inspiration for someone or some character to be sexual. And it's funny that you mentioned dishes, because one of my favorite stories of mine that I should probably put up as its own ebook or something is called Doing the Dishes, and it was in Best Women's Erotica 2004. And it was inspired in part by, like, I enjoyed doing dishes, and in the story, the character, she has a fetish for it, which I wouldn't say I have a sexual fetish for it, but I do really enjoy doing dishes. I find it soothing and cathartic, and I have done the dishes for people I've been seeing, and there's something really intimate about it, because, you know, they ate off that plate, and they probably cooked using it, and there's all sorts of things going on. And I think that's something, you know, housework in general, we don't think of it as erotic per se, unless someone's like wearing a French maid's outfit. But this goes back to what I said before as to the motivation. Like, it's not that that's inherently erotic, but that if the person has the motivation to find it erotic, then, and you can bring that out, then you can have a story. So I think really you could set erotica like anywhere, with people doing anything, as long as you convey, you know, what it is about that act, if it's not what we think of as a sexual act, you know. So, but I think it's really interesting, like, where people get their ideas, because it's usually, for me, not when I'm looking for an idea. Like, if I'm looking for something, if I'm looking through a magazine specifically to get an idea, I don't always come up with one, but when I'm not looking for one, I'll find one.
I think that's absolutely true, and I think maybe it's because your mind is sort of in a different place. It's like not trying too hard, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
Whereas if you're thinking, oh, I've got to have an idea, I've got to have an idea, oh, I just got to have an idea, nothing happens. But then you're off doing your grocery shopping or maybe, you know, doing the laundry, whatever, and suddenly it hits you because you're not thinking about it. Your mind is at rest, sort of.
I mean, to me, those are like some of the best ideas, and I don't always know where I get them, you know. It's usually very indirectly inspired by something. If it's something that happened to me, it's often like in an oblique way, like in a hard to explain way. So, like, I have a
Absolutely.
Tattoo, but the
yeah.
tattoo in my story is not, you know, about that. And I think, you know, I think that the sort of the backstory to a story can be just as interesting as the actual story itself.
Yeah, I think that's true. I would like to do some blog posts about that, actually, because I'd love to hear how people came up with their stories. I think it's fascinating.
Well, speaking of which, you have a story in my book Smooth, right? Erotic Stories for Women, which is Muscle Bound, which is set in a gym. Can you tell us a little bit about that story, and both about the story itself and, you know, what inspired it?
Well, actually, the story is about a young woman. It's sort of a retro story. It takes place in the 80s, back in the women's weight training craze time. And so a young woman fresh out of university signs up at a gym for a women's weight training class, and the woman leading the class happens to be an artist, as well as just really hot. And the two, through the course of the story, have an interesting relationship and actually end up creating art. But the story just basically came from my own experience, you know, of women's weight training and being very impressed with the woman that I knew who did it. And it wasn't just her body, it was her confidence and the way she moved, and everything about her was something that I wished I had. And
that's where that story
came from, basically.
I think that's really interesting, because there's the, like, erotic desire element, but the admiration element, too, the sort of wanting to be with that person but be like them as well.
Yeah, sort of hero worship, sort of.
And also,
you
know? I find the gym, I've just recently just kind of randomly wrote two stories set in gyms, both really different, but I think it's a really interesting setting because, well, A, for me, often it's just not a sexy place at all. You're like sweating and you're tired and you're, you know, grouchy or whatever. Or maybe you're not, maybe you're energized. But I mean, I totally see the possibility because, you know, there's people all around you and there's lots of stuff going on. But it's really interesting to me sometimes settings that really work well in erotica are not always sexy or what I would think of as sexy in real life. And I'm reminded of that every time I get on a plane because I edited a whole book of plane erotica, The Mile High Club.
Mm-hmm.
But like almost always when I'm traveling, I'm like, oh, this is like not the fun part of the traveling. Like the part of traveling I like is being in another city, not not actually flying on a plane. So I find it kind of amusing.
Absolutely.
You know, and it's such
yeah.
a big thing. But, you know, in real life, obviously, it really isn't often, doesn't live up to the, you know, erotic promise. But but that's what I love about fiction. You can make it as sexy as you want it to be.
Oh, yeah, that's the great thing about it. You can take something that's totally unsexy and twist it and make something outrageously sexy from it. That's one of my favorite ways to create a story. You take something very mundane and say, or very cliche and say, all right, how can I make this sexy? And it's amazing what you come up with by doing that.
Do you find that there's a difference between U.S. and U.K. audiences in terms of erotica? Like, do the U.K. audiences want something qualitatively different, or do you adjust your writing if you're writing for a U.K. or U.S. publisher at all?
Mostly in terms of language, because I'm obviously American living in the UK, and I've lived here for a long
mm-hmm.
time, so I know the slang a lot better than most Americans would who are writing for a UK audience. But I think, you know, other than adjusting certain words and certain slang, I sort of have found that anything that I write sells either place. I think that there's just the market, and all of the other writers that I know here are the same. They pretty much find that American writers are fascinated with the slight differentness of the UK and stories set in the UK and vice versa. And I think that that makes for interesting reading. It's sort of like reading a travel story. If you read something set in France, you go, oh, wow,
yeah.
This is cool. This is different. I've never been there. And even though they may be talking about things you don't completely identify with, the otherness in itself makes it interesting and sexy.
And I think sort of just the idea, like you brought up France, and I think, you know, Americans have this idea like French people are so much more sexy than Americans, if I can make a huge generalization. You know, but it's interesting because, and I don't know because I've only been there once, but like, you know, are the things that Americans might think are sexy about French people what French people think are sexy about French people? You know, it's... I think it's interesting, and I do get a lot of stories. I get a lot of stories set in Japan with usually Americans visiting Japan. And two that I recall, see, this is where I get in trouble because I've edited so many anthologies that I can't remember where the stories are. And I can't always remember their names. Not necessarily a bad thing, but because I know Donna George Story, who wrote a whole novel set in Japan, Amorous Woman, she's written really well. And R. Gay wrote a really great story set in Japan that I think actually is in Do Not Disturb, my hotel erotica book. I'm going to look that up. And I think there is an element of someone going to another culture and exploring it and learning about, you know, the cultural differences that I think can be interesting. I think it can be a tough balancing act because, you know, you're an outsider looking into that culture. And in this case, it's actually about love hotels. The story is called So Simple a Place. And it's by Isabel Gray, and it's about love hotels. And it's about a man and a woman who have to go to them in order to consummate their relationship because he lives at home, and they can't go to their home. And I think, you know, there's an element somewhat of the travel, well, she's traveling or she's, you know, living in another country. And that's something that I think is really interesting in general, travel and how that changes the person traveling, like whether it means that they would do something that they wouldn't normally do at home, or whether by the nature of being somewhere where something else is more accepted or less accepted, that changes the nature of their sexuality, you know, that or what they can do in public or what, you know, something like that. But I find that when I'm traveling, it's not so much that I'm inspired to write erotica per se, but I'm just inspired by looking around and seeing things that are just totally new to me. And I think even the really mundane things are more interesting when you're traveling because you haven't seen them a million times before.
I think that's true. And in a lot of ways, even if it's a short trip, you recreate yourself during the time that you're gone. You're somebody different because you're in a different place and a different culture, and that makes for all kinds of interesting ideas for fiction.
And I think, yeah, no, I think that's pretty fascinating to me. Oh, I like that I'm looking at your blog and you wrote about garden porn, which I just think the term garden porn, like I think kind of the term anything porn, you know, people are like, oh, real estate porn or food porn. And usually people are sort of using it in a slightly facetious way, but I think it's interesting because it could be porn, and you know, it could be, you know, if a person in the sense that, like, if it's something that turns someone on or something that you know, people relate to in that way, I just think the term, using the term porn in that colloquial way, it's fun, but it's also interesting, you know.
I think so, too. I think, the idea of something turning you on so much, you know, where is the line between what's sexual and what's not? Well, I mean, especially with something like gardening, but we won't go there, will we?
But, you can go there. I can't go there because I know nothing
frequently,
about gardening.
Actually. But I'm not sure, well, you know, if I should do that on the radio. But
I think it's interesting because what is porn or what is erotic or what is a turn on to different people? I mean, I think, like, people ask me often, like, what do I look for from the stories that people send me? And it's often things that I couldn't say that I look for, but that you know, come in that I never would have thought of. Like, for instance, in Smooth, that you have a story in, there's a sushi girl story. And it's from the point of view of a woman who works as a sushi girl, and she's in a restaurant and people are eating sushi off of her. And there's a tension in the story because she's, to some degree, I don't know if you'd call her a sex worker, but, you know, she's naked at work and people are eating food off of her. And so there's this power dynamic, and that comes into play to some degree in the story. And I think that was really interesting. And, like, that was a topic. The topic was female nudity, which was what I gave out in the call. I got a lot of people stripping, a lot of people kind of going outdoors naked in some way, which I also wrote about. I wrote a story called Chili Girl, which is about a woman who winds up, well, it's about, like, snow and ice and naked skin. And I think it's really interesting just how people approach a given topic and the breadth of what they bring to it. And a lot of that is, you know, people's imagination. And it's not something that I, as an editor, could ever predict people would write. And I don't even know if they could predict that they would write it or write it in that precise way. And to me, that's something, that's the part of editing that I enjoy the most, the surprise element, you know. And as I'm editing Best Bondage Erotica 2012, you know, you would think, oh, bondage, everyone knows what that is. But the authors that I'm choosing, you know, a lot of them are coming to the idea of bondage in a different way than I've ever thought about it, you know, in ways that really make it something new and different and exciting. And I think that's the challenge, whether, you know, you're starting out or whether you've been writing erotica for a long time, to sort of say something new about sex, which obviously is something not new, but I guess you could say that about any kind of writing, that the challenge is to make it vibrant and fresh, whether it's about, you know, a topic that people have been writing about for thousands of years or not.
I think that's true. I think the different twist on something, or the different, it's the way you view things. I notice when I'm reading other people's erotica, that's the thing that sparks it for me. If they've approached something in a different way and looked at something that, like you said, has been written about for thousands of years, but they've approached it in a way that I never would have thought about it before, a new, fresh way. I think those are the best stories, I think.
I think we have a new caller from Los Angeles. Hello?
I'm going to let you go because I'm running up my cell phone here, and I just realized I'm about to lose you. So it was lovely
talking
to you.
Okay, well, thank you so much for calling.
Thanks, Rachel. Bye.
Thank you. Bye. Hi, I think we have someone from Los Angeles.
Hello?
Hello?
Rachel?
Yes.
Hi, Rachel. It's Ori. Oriana.
Hi.
Hi, how are you? It's so weird because, like, I just know people are calling in. I don't know who they are. And most of them I've never talked to before. So I'm like, who is this? What's going on? And I'm constantly, because I'm a little paranoid, I'm like, what if someone calls in and is, like, really mean to me or is just like, blah, 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 blah. Or, like, what if someone crazy calls in? So, yay, Ori, hi.
Hey. I know, it feels so weird to call you on
I know. So wait, why don't you tell everyone, like, your full name and about your book, and also tell me when you're coming to New York, if you know.
Okay, well, my full name is Oriana Small, and my alias is Ashley Blue, because that's my porn name, but I have a real name, too. So, and my book is called Girlvert, a porno memoir. And we have a new release date because it's been delayed again. But June 1st is when it's released.
June 1st is soon. That's in, what, 6 weeks? 5 weeks? Something like that.
Yeah, and we're having, like, a big triple S night. Are you going to come?
Is it in New York? Yes.
No, we're going to have one in New York. I'm not sure the date for that. But we're having triple X night here in West Hollywood.
LA.
In LA.
Maybe. And where can people find out more about the book?
They can go to the Rare Bird Lit website. I think it's rarebirdlit.com or Amazon has it. Where
cool.
else? I have some videos on my blog on davenaz.com/Oriana. I did.
Cool.
I did
can you tell us? Can you tell us about the book a little bit?
It's a porn memoir. So like I had these really crazy years, like when I first got into porn, and I wrote about that time. That time is now over because I've cleaned up my life and I'm not that, like, I'm not too wild anymore, but I loved that time and it was really gross and wonderful and wild. And so I had to, like, capture it forever.
I like that you said you'd love it even though, or maybe not even though, but, and it was gross. Like, how do you feel now looking back on that time? I mean, do you feel like, oh, I wish I had done this differently? Or do you feel like, oh, I'm really happy with how everything went, even the darker things?
I mean, there are so many things that I was like a fuck up. And and I'm really, I wouldn't change any of it because it's now looking back, it's so funny. Like, and all that... all those, like, mistakes and dumb things I did, like, I'm glad I did them because it's funny to me now. I don't know. I guess it's given me, like, a lot of, like, I don't know, like, character or something. Like, and yeah, it's...
Do you feel like there's any lessons for people who are going into porn now, to take away, like, to do or not do, or do you feel like it's more just, this is my story?
I think it's more like, this is my story. If I were going to give a recommendation to a girl getting into porn, I would tell her to do everything that she wants to do. Don't hold anything back, because you may,
you may not have a chance to do it again. The way, like, in that body that you're in now, like, that body is going to change. And you may not want to do it later. So I would say, like, just do everything in the whole world. Like, it's something that maybe, like, I even regret not having done because I was too chicken and I thought it was just so terrible. But, and I couldn't do it now because, I don't know, the same thing, like too chicken now, but I wish that maybe I...
Wait, what is it? Can I ask you what it... I can ask you what it is. What?
But I can't... So, like, I would say if there's any, like, if you have any instinct to do something, just be bold and do it, like, right away.
I feel like that's, like, the opposite of, like, most people are like, well, you should consider this and this and this and this. No, but I think there's value in, like, both of those points of view, because I think sometimes people, certainly me, like, overthink things, and then you get to a point where you've overthought it so much that you, like, don't even have a sense of perspective on, like, what's realistic and what's not, you know?
Right. I guess I don't like talking myself out of things, and I feel like that's a part of, like, being young and like it, that's what I, the beauty of this time that I wrote about, like, that's the part I kind of miss, is just my dumbness and, like, how I don't know, like, I just think it's beautiful, like, all these really fucked up things that happen, like, I, that's like the best time of my life.
Is there any, like, one moment in the book where you're like, oh, my God, I can't believe I did that? Like, or any one moment where you think people are going to be like, oh, my God, I can't believe she wrote that?
when I wrote about when HIV broke out in my year, 2004, mm-hmm. And that was the year I won Performer of the Year, and I mentioned that the guy that got it, he was down in Brazil shooting.
Wow.
I wrote in my book, like, why are people shooting in Brazil still? Like, maybe some people are not gonna like that, but I don't like that. I don't like mixing it up like that, because their tests are, like, super fucked up, and it was, you know, and it ended up being a tragedy. So, anyway, maybe some people aren't going to like that.
Well, I mean, but I think it's something, you know, certainly topical that, you know, the industry is dealing with, like, and people are debating, like, what, I mean, even now, I mean, it's not like it's over, it's a topic that's just from, you know, however many years ago. I mean, it's an ongoing, you know, topic of, I think, interest to people inside and outside of the industry.
I'm kind of afraid that, like, some, I don't know, like, also, like, religious people might, like, look at my book and see all the negative things I wrote and just see it as a negative piece, when it's really not. It's just kind of matter of fact. I'm just, because I'm not, like, sugarcoating things doesn't mean that I'm putting it down. Like, I really...
Well, I also think, like, when you sugarcoat something, you ultimately, like, do it a disservice because it's not honest, but also, you know, I mean, most things are not so black and white that there's one obvious answer or even one obvious experience. It's like yours is one experience amongst, you know, lots of different people's experiences.
Right.
And I feel like sometimes people want, like, a memoir, which is, like, one person's story, to be telling a million people's story, or, like, to have the answer for everyone else, and that's sort of impossible.
Right.
So cool. I think we have to start wrapping up. But thank you for calling, and hopefully we can do this again.
Yeah, well, I'll be in New York the last week of, or, like, from the 22nd or something for the Book Expo.
Book Expo, BookExpoAmerica.com, everybody. I'll be there, too, on the Wednesday, signing free books. Yay, free books.
Cool. Then I get to see you.
Yay. Okay, I'll talk to you soon. Bye, Lori.
Bye.
Bye.
Thank you, everyone, for listening. And we will do this again soon. So you can follow me on Twitter at Raquelita, and also follow the Blog Talk Radio site to find out when we're on next.
On a debris, at the Sunday morning market, you were starting to the odds and ends. You was looking for a bargain. I heard your footsteps at the front door. You knew you'd find me waiting there at the top of the stairs. At the depot, with the General Workers Union, and yet that they'll never change a thing. Well, they won't fight, and they're not working. Now we both know.